En grå rævehaj. Kroppen er spøgelsesagtig, halvt ægte, halvt indbildt. Mens mine øjne tilpasser sig, skærer andre halvmåner igennem det mørke vand. Afrundet rygge og kantede finner er synlige det øjeblik, de fanger solens stråler. Det er svært at sige, hvor mange der er. Havstrøm ryster masken af mit ansigt og svinger mig fra side til side på mit revanker. Men hajerne rider langsomt og ubesværet på strømmen og bøjer den efter deres ønske med usynlige bevægelser. Nærmest usynlige lokker de store fisk. Fristes til at følge med dem væk fra revet. Men vi er hæmmet af vandets tryk. Kilden til deres frihed fanger os. De strømninger, de kræver, vil fejre os væk i det øjeblik, vi giver slip. Hvilket vi gør nu. Vores tanke er allerede halvtomme. Frie til at drive. Revet suser forbi. Spoler tilbage til den første del af dykket. Når jeg kigger op mod den mørke klippe, ser jeg silhuetter af hajfinder, spredt som et net af fingre. De forgrenede koraller ligner vintertræer. Men bladerne på træerne er der stadig, og hæver sig omkring grenspidserne. Tusindvis af bitte små fisk, mørke ovaler mod lyset. Det her er fra bogen Coral Reefs. Af Underwater Memoir af Colum Roberts. Bogen er en historie om et mere end 3 årtiers langt forhold mellem en passioneret havbiolog og de mest biodiverse habitater på jorden, nemlig koralrev. Bogen fortæller om koralrevenes fortid og om deres mulige fremtid. Desværre blegner koraller i dag. Det skyldes, at korallerne på grund af stigende havtemperatur må udstøde de bitte små alger, der lever i deres yderste væv, som giver dem deres farvestrålende kulør og laver deres mad. Når algerne udstødes, blegner korallerne, og før eller siden dør de af sult. Denne episode af Lyden af Videnskab er en meget sørgelig kærlighedshistorie om de smukkeste og mest mangfoldige økosystemer. Koralrevs undergang. Og til at fortælle denne triste historie har vi koralrevenes store beskytter, Colum Roberts, der forelskede sig i koralrev ved første blik, og som har viet sit liv til at beskytte dem. Han vil tage os med til nogle af de smukkeste steder på jorden og fortælle om hans livslange kærlighed til koralrev. Han vil advare om deres undergang og opfordre til at lægge pres på politikere til at gøre noget lige nu.
Lyden af videnskab.
Velkommen til.
Lyden af videnskab.
Det vi ved.
Experiment.
Brain is a strange instrument.
What I want to know is what's going on.
Are these right?
Somewhat unfamiliar conception. What they have
arranged. I want to know why the universe exists.
Question. What goes on in your brain?
A simple mathematical error.
Non-selective chemicals. Ravying.
Run the experiment. It's about how we fit into all of this. And
what you see when you look is not what is really there.
Some distant civilization.
Vi er til et Science and Cocktails arrangement i DR's store koncertsal, hvor Colum Roberts lige om lidt vil gå på scenen og holde et fantastisk og skræmmende foredrag om fremtidens hav.
Thank you very much. This is a great opportunity to talk to a very sophisticated audience about science and about why I love the ocean and why I'm worried about its future, but why I'm also optimistic about its future.
For dem af jer, som ikke kender Colum Roberts, han er professor i marine conservation ved University of Exeter i Storbritannien. Hans forskning fokuserer på truslerne mod livet i havet og på at finde midlerne til at beskytte havets biodiversitet. I de sidste årtier har han brugt sin videnskabelige baggrund til at advokere for beskyttelse af livet i havet, både nationalt og internationalt. Han er videnskabelig chefrådgiver for Blue Marine Foundation og Maldives Coral Institute. Og så var han videnskabelig rådgiver for BBC's Blue Planet 2-serie. Og der vil derfor være små uddrag af serien i denne her podcast.
So, the world is a very wet planet, and this is how most of us think of it, as 7/10 sea and 3/10 land. But in reality, it is even saltier than that. Because when you take into account that third dimension of depth, then 97% of the volume of living space on Earth is made up by ocean, which is incredible. It means that rather than the world, the land world, which is our fiefdom, where we have been and where our attention is focused, that is not the only thing. In fact, it's a minor part of the world when it comes to the space available for creatures to live in.
Havene udgør 92% af det rumfang på jorden, hvor skabninger kan leve. Og det er her fra havet, livet på jorden har udviklet sig. Men før vi dykker ned i havet for at forstå, hvordan klimaforandringerne påvirker koralrevene, vil vi dykke ind i personen Callum Roberts, som jeg havde den store fornøjelse af at møde på hans hotel i København. For at undgå at få optagelserne inficeret af den konstante lounge-musik i caféen, var Callum Roberts så venlig at invitere mig op på hans hotelværelse, hvor vi satte os til rette i to store, bløde lænestole med udsigt over havet.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Callum Roberts. I'm professor of marine conservation at the University of Exeter in England. And I've been working on marine protection for the best part of 35 years now.
So you've been in the field for a long time.
It feels like it.
So how did your interest in marine biology begin?
I grew up in the north coast of Scotland, and I lived by the sea. Every day, seals would come and haul out in the tidal river in front of my house, and so I gained this just kind of connection with the ocean through assimilation.
Callum Roberts voksede op ved kysten i Skotland, og havet var derfor fra starten en helt naturlig stor del af hans liv.
And when I went to university, I studied biology, and I got the opportunity to go and visit a coral reef in Saudi Arabia to do some research there. And the moment that I set foot in the water on that reef was a point of no return. I knew at that moment what I wanted to do with my life, and I would dedicate myself to finding out about this beautiful world underwater and exploring it and describing it and finding out how it worked.
Den første gang oplevede et koralrev i Saudi-Arabien, vidste han med det samme, hvad han ville bruge resten af sit liv på. De skotske klipper var hårde, og havet var mørkt og farefuldt, så han drømte sig ofte et andet sted hen, hvor havet var varmere og vandet lyst, så man tydeligt kunne se havets levende vidunder.
You know, when you looked at the sea in the north of Scotland and it was cold and the mist was rolling in, then you'd think of yourself somewhere in a place where the sea was a beautiful blue and warm and full of life that was much easier to see. So when I went to the tropics and discovered that place in real life, then I was immediately hooked. That when you first go underwater on a coral reef, the blaze of life around you is just extraordinary. As you plunge into the water, the fish first fly apart frightened by your arrival, but then they immediately come back and they start carrying on with what they're doing. The extraordinary thing is that there's so many different kinds of fish underwater. If you go to a park in Europe, you see some birds and there may be 5 or 10 different species of birds that you can easily see around you within half an hour or so. But if you jump on a reef, you can see 100 species of fish almost immediately. And that variety is unparalleled, really, in almost any other place on the planet. even tropical rainforests, you never see this abundance of life because most of it's hidden in the forest and among the trees and the plants, but it's right there in front of you on a coral reef. And of course, the corals themselves are extraordinary. They are multicolored, they have such different and extraordinary shapes. They're branching ones, plate-like ones, brain-shaped corals, others that are folded like lace, and that looks like the most incredible garden that these fish are swimming among.
How come that there are so many different species around coral reefs?
That's a question that we don't have a complete answer to at the moment. There are lots of ideas. There are ideas about how the tropics have been a more stable environment for evolution to be able to do its work, and over the long period of time, without catastrophes like ice ages to interrupt the progress of accumulation of species, we've seen a large number of fish that have evolved, and corals and different forms of marine life.
Fordi de varme områder, hvor koralrev findes, ikke har været udsat for store katastrofer eller ændringer i klimaet, som f.eks. istider, har områderne fået tid til at udvikle en enorm biodiversitet.
The thing about coral reefs is that they are definitely the richest of all underwater ecosystems. Nowhere else on the planet do you find more species crammed into less space than on a coral reef. And one often quoted figure is that they occupy something like 0.1% of the area of the ocean, but they support a quarter of all marine species. Now that figure itself is uncertain, but what we do know is that the sheer numbers of species that are present in a given area, you know, there could be several thousand species that you would pass by. Many of them you won't see because they're too small, but you could pass them by within the space of a one-hour scuba dive.
Man siger, at koralrev fylder mindre end 1% af havet, men bidrager med mere end 25% af havets arter. Og hvis det ikke var for korallerne i sig selv, ville områderne med koralrev ikke være så fulde af liv.
So corals live in a way that creates a habitat that is ideal for other species to live in. And corals are colonial animals. Each animal is only a few millimeters to a few centimeters across, and they form colonies of sometimes many thousands of individual polyps, as they're called, and they secrete skeletons of calcium carbonate, which is the main ingredient of chalk. And with this growth, they build reefs that are huge structures. Over thousands of years, these structures form in the ocean that can be seen from space because they are so tangible, and they're geologically enduring. There are fossilized reefs that are millions of years old, and they're still there, you know, we can still see them.
Koralrev består af millioner af små individuelle polypper, som bygger deres skeletter af kalksten, hvilket gør dem hårde og svært nedbrydelige. Polyperne former gigantiske kolonier, der kan ses fra rummet, og de unedbrydelige skeletter kan holde i millioner af år. Og de her tredimensionelle strukturer, som korallerne former, skaber et habitat, der er fordelagtigt for en stor variation af arter, der på forskellig vis er afhængige af hinanden og drager fordel af hinanden, men også er i hård konkurrence med hinanden.
In this crowded, frenetic community, every individual has to find its own place, its own way of surviving. But none of these creatures would be here if it were not for the coral.
Fordi koralrevene skaber et levested, der er fordelagtigt for så mange forskellige arter, er arterne nødt til at kæmpe om plads, og må derfor finde hver deres niche for at overleve. Hvilket gør arterne i det her område meget forskellige.
The coral reefs that we have today, these are among the biggest reefs that have ever been built in the geological history of the world. This is one of the great periods of reef formation in world history. And we are privileged to be here at that time and to see the incredible variety and abundance of life that they support.
Korallerne har blomstret i den seneste periode af jordens historie. Men korallernes storhedstid vil snart være forbi på grund af de stigende havtemperaturer. For mens koralrevene har levet i en himmel af lyksalighed og nyt godt af fordelene ved millioner af års evolution og langsom tilpasning, har en anden art, mennesket, udviklet sig ud over alle grænser.
This complex web of life of which we are a part has been millennia in the making. Whilst Darwin's insights explain how this web came about, over 200 years later, we are still only beginning to understand its interconnections and which of these connections are the most vital. Yet we do know for certain is that these connections can break. From the dinosaurs to other spectacular fossils, we have all been within touching distance of astonishing fragments of ecosystems long gone. As far as we know, there have been 5 major extinction events on our planet. Events caused by changes so severe that many species simply can't adapt and, as such, die out. Right now, we are in the midst of the Earth's 6th mass extinction. One every bit as profound and far-reaching as that which wiped out the dinosaurs. It's almost impossible to grasp, as we go about our lives, that the rest of life on Earth is experiencing destruction on the scale of that wrought by a colossal asteroid collision.
Menneskets succes med at overleve har ikke kun påvirket alle andre arter på planeten og forårsaget den 6. masseuddøen. Den har også ændret vores perspektiv på havet.
There was a time when we feared the ocean, where the ocean had control over us and we were humble in its presence. But we are now agents of change with the capacity to change the oceans too. And we're confronting 2 fallacies that we have held dear in our hearts for a very long time. One of which is that the sea will provide for us whatever we want. And then the second fallacy is it will take away whatever we don't want. So our attitudes and our thinking to the ocean have changed dramatically in the last 50 years or so.
It's horrifying to think that plastic is being washed up on our beaches and brought back by our wildlife, and we can't ignore it anymore. It's really shocking. You know, our ocean has become a dumping ground simply because people don't see what's in the ocean.
Climate change is real. It will change where things are, even where people live. But will we stop before we go too far?
If the oceans weren't healthy, and if the oceans don't stay healthy and regain their health, human beings are doomed. That's the bottom line. The oceans make the Earth a habitable planet.
De klimaændringer, som vi oplever lige nu, påvirker alle økosystemer og arter på planeten. Og nogen mere end andre. Desværre er koraller nogle af de mere følsomme arter.
Coral reefs are proving themselves to be very vulnerable to the effects of climate change, and they are in a way telling us that the world is changing too fast and in ways that are deeply problematic for the survival of not just their life, but the life of other ecosystems and environments and our own existence and well-being.
For at forstå, hvorfor koraller er så følsomme over for klimaændringer, er vi nødt til at forstå, hvilken slags væsener de er. Med deres hårde overflade kan de ofte forveksles med sten, og fordi de slår rod på bunden af havet, bliver de ofte forvekslet med planter. Men i modsætning til sten er koraller levende, og i modsætning til planter laver de ikke deres egen mad af sollys og CO2. Koraller er en slags dyr, kaldet polypper. Og bare en af de forgrenede koraller består af tusindvis af små polypper. Hver polyp har en sæklignende krop og en mund, der er omgivet af stikkende fangearme. Polyperne bruger calciumkarbonat, altså kalksten, fra havvand til at bygge det hårde skelet, som beskytter polypens bløde, sarte krop. Korallerne i sig selv er hvide, og det, der gør dem farverige, er det, der har gjort dem succesfulde overlevere. Men det er også det, der gør dem sårbare over for klimaforandringerne. Korallernes farver kommer nemlig fra små alger, der lever inde i korallernes væv. Algerne forsyner korallerne med sukker, som de laver via fotosyntese af sollys og CO2. Til gengæld beskytter korallerne algerne i deres væv.
So this animal is at the same time vegetable and mineral. So, you know, it's not a question of is it an animal, a vegetable or a mineral. It is all three at the same time. The relationship between the plant and the coral formed many millions of years ago, and when that union took place, it made the corals incredibly rapidly growing compared to things that had previously existed. So those corals then were able to build these immense reefs as a result of living like plants in a way. But the relationship is temperature sensitive, we're finding out. And if you raise a temperature more than 1 degree centigrade above the normal thermal maximum that a coral experiences, then what we see is that the plant and the coral have to separate. The relationship becomes toxic. And so instead of benefiting the coral by giving it food, the plant then takes away from the coral and they have to get rid of them or they die. And if they get rid of the plants, they starve.
Når havtemperaturerne stiger, overopheder algerne, og de begynder at tære på korallen. Og de bliver derfor dødelige for korallen, som har udstødt dem for at overleve, hvilket gør, at de mister deres farve. Men uden algerne vil korallerne før eller siden dø af sult. Der er kun et lille, snævert vindue for overlevelse. For hvis temperaturerne falder inden for et par uger, kan korallerne nå at genoptage algerne, inden de sulter ihjel.
But that often doesn't happen. Usually it doesn't happen. And the corals die by their tens of millions. And we've seen several big episodes of global coral bleaching and death over the last 2 decades. And they have left a very long-lasting legacy. The corals have struggled to recover in places that they have died in these bleaching events. And we're seeing that the bleachings are now happening with less time between them, and the reefs are not having enough time to recover.
It's now undeniable that the world is changing, if you believe for even a second in science, because science says that in so many different ways that we are changing the planet with greenhouse gas emissions, and every year it gets hotter. And we can see that especially clearly when you look at ocean heat. Almost every year is a record-breaking year in terms of ocean heat content. And that's good for us, because what it means is that we're being spared much worse things happening to us on land. The ocean is a huge air conditioner for the planet. By taking up all that extra heat that's being trapped by greenhouse gas emissions, well, it's done us a favor. And how big a favor? It's absorbed something like 93% of the additional heat that has been added to the atmosphere by trapping under greenhouse gases. How much do you think the atmosphere would have warmed if it hadn't been for the ocean taking up all of this extra heat? How many degrees centigrade do you think it would be warmer than it is today? The world has warmed a little over 1 degree centigrade so far. So without the ocean, how much would it have warmed, do you think? 10. I'm hearing a few tens out there. Well, actually, yeah, it's a few tens taken together, 36 degrees centigrade.
Atmosfæren ville have været intet mindre end 36 grader varmere, hvis det ikke havde været for havenes enorme kapacitet til at optage varme. Men selvom vand har en utrolig varmekapacitet, er gennemsnitstemperaturen i havet steget med 0,7 grader. Og det er nok til at lave væsentlige ændringer, hvilket har vidtstrækkende konsekvenser for det globale klima og for havets økosystemer.
And one way in which you can see this extra energy is in more powerful currents. Faster currents are flowing around the sea now than they were 150 years ago. One of the things you don't think it's possible to change on that kind of scale is the planetary environment, but it's happening. And that's also expressed in the power of waves. And another way in which that heat is manifested in the ocean is in sea level rise. And the volume of the ocean is increasing because we're melting the ice and we are increasing the volume that the sea occupies by warming it. Warm substances take up more space than cold.
I Callum Roberts' foredrag til Science and Cocktails uddyber han, hvordan klimaforandringerne får vejret til at ændre sig og vandstanden til at stige. Og du kan se hele hans foredrag på Science and Cocktails YouTube-kanal. Han har også nogle rigtig gode visualiseringer af de globale ændringer. Men i denne podcast vil vi dykke ned til korallerne igen, for at se på, hvad det er, der sker med den biodiversitet, de frembringer, når de blegnes og dør.
The corals create three-dimensional architectural complexity, and that complexity gives a lot of different living spaces for other animals and plants on the reef. And when they die, they gradually collapse into rubble and sand, and they get covered in seaweed. And that means that the space that they provided is not there any longer, and many of the other species die with them. So we find that coral reefs that have been killed and degraded support far fewer species than the ones that are rich and alive.
Når korallerne dør, vil den tredimensionelle struktur, de har opbygget, sande til at blive fyldt med alger. Det vil derfor ikke længere være et attraktivt habitat for den store diversitet af arter, som så også vil forsvinde med tiden.
So there is a problem for everything. If the corals die, then the whole reef ecosystem follows in this kind of spiral of degradation.
In your time, you've been exploring the coral reefs since the 80s. Did you experience this change yourself? Did you see coral reefs that you've been visiting many years ago that's now been bleached or are dying?
I have, unfortunately. Anyone who's been around for more than a couple of decades will have seen coral reefs gradually suffering, gradually degrading. I went back to an island in the Caribbean this year called Bonaire, and I had been there in 1994 with my wife, who's also a scientist, and we had described the reef. We'd measured how much coral there was, how many fish there were. And this year we went back and did exactly the same survey again. And this time there was 47% less coral than there was in 1994, and there was more seaweed, there was less space occupied by living organisms.
Selvom det område i Karibien, som Callum Roberts og hans kone undersøgte sidste år, var beskyttet for at bevare biodiversiteten, var der alligevel 47% færre koraller, mange flere alger og det hele taget meget mindre liv end 27 år tidligere.
And that's really reflecting the struggle that coral reefs are facing these days. And this is despite the fact that Bonaire has been protected by a very well-managed marine park for all of that time. We've been trying hard to protect it, but it's hard to protect against things over which you have no control. And climate change is something where we have no local control at all, and we have to tackle it through global action.
Okay, so what is the biggest threat to the coral reefs? Is it climate change, or is it human actions like destroying it?
It's a combination of factors. The local actions are problematic in some places. You know, coral reefs can be loved to death because so many thousands of people visit them every year, and they're ultimately fragile. The coral animal itself is just a thin layer of fragile tissue over a stony skeleton. It's easily damaged. So too much visitor use can cause problems. Too much fishing causes problems. Development and pollution from the land, that causes problems for reefs. But the biggest existential threat that they face comes from greenhouse gas emissions and global warming that is resulting from that. And so coral reefs face a very uncertain future, and the predictions from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change are that if we don't urgently reduce emissions and keep the temperature within 1.5 degrees centigrade of the pre-industrial average, then coral reefs are going to change dramatically and lose a lot of their coral.
Selvom forurening, fiskeri og turisme skader koralrevene, så er det CO2-udledning og den deraf følgende temperaturstigning, der er den klart største trussel for koralrevene. Men selvom det lykkes at leve op til den ambitiøse Paris-aftale om at holde den gennemsnitlige temperaturstigning til 1,5 grader, risikerer vi alligevel at miste 70-90% af alle koraller.
That's a prediction, and it's a very stark and dramatic prediction. And we see that corals are adapting to warmer temperatures. The problem is they're not adapting fast enough. So the bleaching event which happened, the mass mortality that happened in 1998, was the most severe we've ever seen. We had a repeat of that in 2015-16, and the conditions were the same extreme that happened in 1998, but less coral died this time, although it was very bad. And that's because there is some adaptation, there is some kind of increase in resistance of coral reefs between these events.
Det her er gode nyheder. For videnskab har vist, at nogle af korallerne har vendet sig til de stigende temperaturer. Forskere har overvåget koralrev i et område i Stillehavet. Et område, der gentagende gange med årsinterval er blevet ramt af voldsomme temperaturstigninger. Men for hver gang er koralrevene blevet genopbygget, og ødelæggelserne blevet mindre end ved foregående temperaturstigning. Baseret på observationerne har videnskabsfolk konkluderet, at korallerne til en vis grad tilpasser sig til de stigende temperaturer. Og hvordan denne her tilpasning foregår, er der forskellige forklaringer på. En forklaring er, at de koraller, der overlever temperaturstigningerne, yngler og skaber mere varmebestandige koraller. På den måde tilpasser korallerne sig genetisk ved, at det hele tiden er de mest varmetolerante koraller, der overlever og yngler. En anden forklaring er, at tilpasningen til de højere temperaturer sker i de små alger, der lever i korallernes væv. Som Callum Roberts forklarede, bliver algerne giftige for korallerne, når de bliver overophedet. Når temperaturen stiger og korallerne afviser algerne fra deres væv, flyder algerne rundt i de frie vandmasser. Og de alger, der er mest følsomme over for de høje temperaturer, dør, mens de alger, der tåler temperaturerne, overlever. I andre dele af havet, hvor det ikke er så varmt, vil koraller yngle, og korallarverne, der kan flyde over lange afstande, vil før eller siden ramme det døde koralrev, hvor der er plads til, at de kan slå sig ned. Og hvis de slår sig ned i en periode, hvor de ikke varmetolerante alger udrydder de området, vil de indfange de mere varmetolerante alger. Og på den måde vil korallerne og algernes relation være mere modstandsdygtige over for høje temperaturer. Korallerne er altså i gang med at tilpasse sig vores klimaændringer. Desværre går det bare alt for langsomt.
It's not been enough to save the coral, and we are busy looking at ways as scientists that we can try and find a new means of helping corals survive in the face of climate change. So there's a lot of experiments going on, figuring out how to breed more temperature resistant corals, and if we do that, then we might be able to use that in restoration efforts and hopefully keep coral reefs in business for a bit longer and see through these difficult times ahead. But it will take us helping corals. It will also require us to meet the highest standards of the Paris Agreement rather than slipping back and seeing 2 or 2.5 degrees of temperature rise.
These changes in our behaviour to conserve coral reefs need to happen really soon. Otherwise, you know, our kids aren't going to be able to see these places. There's not going to be any coral left. There's not going to be any fish left.
It's just what we've done. Most people don't realize the magnitude of the changes that are happening. You know, I don't want to make people afraid. I want to empower them. I want to make them understand that we have to change things.
We are at a crossroads right now. It's not too late to choose the future we want, but we need to act now, and we need to act together.
There's a Native American phrase, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our grandchildren. And for me, that really strikes a chord, because I want my children to be able to swim with dolphins. I want them to be able to dive on a coral reef. Everybody can make a difference. Everybody can do little things, and those little things add up, and collectively they make a huge difference.
Are you still optimistic that we will manage to keep those coral reefs for the next century?
I think coral reefs is going to be a very tough call. We're going to try, and I think that we'll throw the best science at it that we can, and obviously that is something which we need to do across the board with climate change and climate adaptation. We need to try and innovate and experiment and produce better ways of living as conditions change, because we know that a lot of change is already locked in. We can't avoid it, because the greenhouse gases have already been emitted, and those changes are embedded in the system. We will have to cope with them. There will be change, but it won't be a dead world 100 years from now. It will be a vibrant living world. The outcome 100 years from now will be very different if we act to protect the planet more, if we reduce the other stresses that are more easily controlled, all those local pressures on coral reefs, pollution and use and development, then the outcome will be a lot better than if we don't. So we have to invest in doing whatever we can for nature protection now, so that there is a better world for generations to come.
Som Colum Roberts her fortæller, så vil jorden forandre sig, og klimaforandringerne er i gang. CO2 er blevet udledt i atmosfæren, og ændringerne kan ikke stoppes nu. Men hvis vi gør noget lige nu, hvis vi går sammen om at opfylde de ambitiøse mål for Paris-aftalen, hvis vi giver naturen plads, så vil vi gå en meget bedre fremtid i møde med en planet, hvor der stadig vil være natur og steder, hvor vi mennesker kan leve. Hvorimod, hvis vi ingenting gør, så vil den fremtidige planet blive et meget goldt sted med væsentligt mindre landområder på grund af et stigende, men tomt hav.
I think we have maybe enough time for a couple more questions. Why is it too difficult for people to get their act together and keep to the climate agreements?
Well, there are, you know, I think you all know the answer to that, because you know, we have comfortable lifestyles, and it's hard to change from a zone of comfort. And so we need an off-ramp, really. And that off-ramp means that we need to find ways of doing the things we do with less environmental cost. And it's taking us a long time to do that. But the second thing is that we're actively being prevented from doing that by big corporations who have a lot to lose if we make those changes. So, you know, if you're an oil company and you have proven reserves underground, and then that is counted against your value. If you then can't drill for that oil and sell it, then your value is much, much less. So these oil companies are resisting in dirty ways and in obvious ways. They're resisting the change that we need. You know, the future economic growth is going to be based on green technologies and technologies that help us transition to a warmer and perhaps more violent planet. So by hanging on to the old and failing to invest in the new, these companies are actually harming themselves, and yet they still are clinging to the old ways. And I think that's dragging us politically. You can see how many politicians are in the pocket of big business, and particularly the oil and gas companies.
Tak fordi du lyttede til Lyden af Videnskab. Denne episode er lavet i samarbejde med Science & Cocktails. Podcasten er finansieret af Novo Nordisk Fonden. Den er skrevet, klippet og produceret af mig, Sofie Hjort. Musik er Hjalte Vested Hjort og grafisk design af Sara Laub.